With the holidays almost here, you don't have time to go to the post office. It'll be packed with everyone mailing holiday gifts and packages. So use Stamps.com instead. With Stamps.com, you can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package using your own computer and printer. Sign up for Stamps.com. Use the promo code REVEAL for this special offer. You'll get a 4-week trial plus a $110 bonus offer, including postage and a digital scale. Go to Stamps.com. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in REVEAL. That's Stamps.com and enter REVEAL.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, you are listening to REVEAL. I'm Al Letson.
Good afternoon, Stacey.
Hey, could I speak with the manager?
Hold on.
Recently, one of our producers, Delaney Hall, called up a guy named Tom Schieser. He manages a grocery store in Barrow, Alaska, which is a little community way up at the very top of the state.
Yeah, it's actually the northernmost community in the U.S. You cannot get any further north. I called Tom on a very special mission.
Good afternoon, AC. This is Tom.
Which was to find strawberries in the most unlikely place I could think of. What's Barrow like? How would you describe it to someone who's never been there before?
Well, the average annual temperature here is about -9 degrees. It's just, we're in the high Arctic. So
wow.
In the winter, just about Thanksgiving, the sun will go down and not show itself again until the beginning of February.
Tom said temperatures in Barrow can drop to -57 degrees. Everyone rides snowmobiles. He said it's like living inside the Discovery Channel. Anyway, I finally cut to the chase. Tell me about your produce selection there. I mean, what kind of produce do you carry?
Basically a little bit of everything, fruits, vegetables, and a full assortment.
Okay. Do you carry strawberries?
We do carry strawberries.
Even when it's -57?
Yes, ma'am.
Wow.
Yeah. Our produce section looks a lot like what you would see in the lower 48.
Well, thanks so much, Tom. I really appreciate it.
You bet.
Okay, bye.
At this point, we're used to living in a world where you can get most produce year-round. But let's just pause and consider that for a minute, because this situation defies nature. Strawberries are delicate. They're prone to disease. They're hard to ship. And yet, you can find them pretty much any time of the year, anywhere in the United States. That's because farmers have figured out how to grow them all the time in a very particular coastal climate, mostly in California. The story of how this happened has a lot of twists and turns, and it actually reveals something about how dangerous technology from the military finds its way into agriculture. The old idea of swords to plowshares from the Bible. This particular story goes all the way back to World War I. Here's Delaney.
The most iconic images of World War I are of trenches, dug into the ground, protected by long coils of barbed wire, full of men in combat gear. Trench warfare was ugly and slow. The only way to gain ground was to rush the opposing army's trench. So to break the stalemate, the Germans came up with an idea.
They hit upon the idea of releasing clouds of chlorine gas, letting it drift across the trenches to soldiers, Allied soldiers on the other side, and poison them.
This is Edmund Russell.
I'm a professor of history at the University of Kansas.
The Germans hoped the chlorine gas would give them a decisive victory and end the war, but instead it led to a chemical arms race. The U.S. set up a whole new division in the military called the Chemical Warfare Service.
Both sides spent enormous effort to develop new and more powerful poison gases, as well as ways to protect against them. This is the war in which gas masks, which are familiar images to us now, were first developed.
One of the gases developed around this time was called chloropicrin. It was a tiny molecule, so tiny that it could actually slip through the filter of a gas mask. Once inside, chloropicrin would make soldiers throw up,
which would lead the soldier to rip the mask off and expose him to the other more dangerous gases, such as mustard gas.
As you might expect, these gases were controversial. They could kill soldiers in slow and agonizing ways, and a strong breeze could carry them off the battlefield and into nearby towns, hurting civilians. When the war ended, the Chemical Warfare Service didn't destroy these poisonous chemicals like you might have expected them to do. Instead, they decided the chemicals just needed a good, old-fashioned rebranding campaign.
So they started emphasizing these civilian uses of chemical weapons and, in fact, said we really should not be called the Chemical Warfare Service. We should be called the Chemical Peace Service because that's mainly what we are doing.
The Chemical Warfare Service, or Peace Service, came up with an especially novel civilian use for all their leftover chloropicrin, the vomiting gas. They shipped it to the pineapple fields of Hawaii.
So in Hawaii, they were growing pineapples like they do in Hawaii, and they were dealing with problems in the soil, pests and diseases that could really just wipe out the crop.
Andy Donahue is an editor here at Reveal. He's our resident strawberry expert, and he knows something about pineapples, too.
What's in the soil are these things called nematodes, which are essentially little worms.
The worms would latch onto the pineapples and slowly strangle them. They were devastating to crops. So some pineapple researchers figured maybe they could use this chemical, chloropicrin, to help wipe out the bugs. They used these handheld guns to inject the gas down into the soil, and the yields just skyrocketed.
Lo and behold, they get these amazing results. There's something like 20 tons more pineapples they could grow per acre. That was sort of the dawn of the era of using these kind of gases in agriculture.
A whole new kind of pesticide was born, fumigants. A couple decades passed, and the California strawberry industry picked up on this new technology. By the 1970s, most strawberry farmers were using fumigants, and once again, the yield skyrocketed. Only this time it was kind of a problem. Farmers were growing way more strawberries than people were eating. Back then, people still thought of the fruit as a delicacy.
Kind of the attitude about strawberries was they were something really you set aside for a special occasion.
This is Dave Riggs, and in 1977, he became the advertising manager for what was then known as the California Strawberry Advisory Board. It was a trade group. Dave's goal was to expand our appetite for strawberries, to turn them from a special occasion fruit into an everyday fruit. He started working on something called tie-ins. That's when products get together to promote each other.
For example, you might have avocados and salsa and Doritos going together on a big Cinco de Mayo ad.
Dave set out to fashion tie-ins for strawberries. Strawberries and cereal, strawberry daiquiris. Even that iconic Cool Whip container with the strawberries on it, that didn't happen by accident.
California strawberries. Imagine how good they'd be, fresh. With shortcake in October, or on a frosty morning in November. At any time of year, fresh California strawberries would be perfect with almost anything.
In addition to the tie-ins, every year Dave would make a pilgrimage to New York to meet with the editors of the seven largest women's magazines.
Well, what do they call them? The Seven Sisters in New York? Ladies Home Journal and Red Book and Good Housekeeping and those type of magazines.
He'd suggest ideas for strawberry-related recipes and articles. And his annual pilgrimage worked.
I remember one year I was counting among the big seven magazines that we actually got more magazine covers than Lady Di, which we thought was a pretty good accomplishment.
The strawberry was the new celebrity fruit. And this came after a few other important developments, like the construction of the interstate highway system, which made it easier to ship fruit, and the invention of the clamshell packaging, which protected strawberries while they were on the road. Andy says the effect of all this history was that Americans started eating a lot more strawberries.
Like a lot more strawberries. It went from being this sort of seasonal delicacy that you could get for a few weeks or months near where you lived to becoming a real year-round staple of the American diet. So where in the 1970s, the average American ate 2 pounds of strawberries, a year we now eat 8 pounds of strawberries.
If you multiply that by the population of the U.S., you get more than 2 billion pounds of strawberries consumed nationally every year. Andy Donahue and his team of reporters here at Reveal have spent a lot of time understanding what this means. Because the modern strawberry industry was built on fumigants. And as our appetite for strawberries has grown, so has the amount of pesticides needed to grow them. Back in World War I, people worried that poisonous gases could blow off the battlefield and into nearby communities. 100 years later, agricultural fumigants still have the exact same problem.
Because these gases are injected into the soil, they don't stay there, right? They raise up out of the ground and they just sort of enter the air. And what we're beginning to learn, or have been learning actually for quite a while, is this can have really bad effects on the environment and on human health.
One fumigant called methyl bromide has been linked to the breakdown of the ozone layer. It's now slowly being phased out of use. Other fumigants have been linked to cancer or to birth defects and developmental problems.
So you had women who were pregnant that lived or worked around these fields, and the study has shown, you know, smaller heads, smaller birth weights, those sort of things.
In one case, Andy's team found that California had allowed growers to use way more of a cancer-causing pesticide than scientists thought was safe, right next to schools and homes. Now, the pesticides aren't harmful to consumers, those of us who eat them. But for the people who live and work in these communities, it's a different story.
And that's what we'll explore in our story next week. It takes us to Florida, where farm workers have taken on some of the biggest restaurant chains in the country in order to improve conditions in the fields.
Señores, atención, por favor. No compre más en Taco Bell.
Don't buy any more at Taco Bell.
Taco Bell.
This week's story was produced by Delaney Hall. It was based on reporting by Kendall Taggart and Bernice Yerm. The story was edited by Andrew Donahue and Taki Telenidis. To read more about the dark side of the strawberry and to see a video about this story, visit revealnews.org. So, how are we doing? Be honest. Leave us a review on iTunes. It makes a big difference and helps new listeners find us. You can also tweet us at Reveal or share your thoughts on our Facebook page. And remember, we're also on the air. Check your local public radio station to see what time they're airing us. Julia B. Chan is our digital editor. Our lead sound designer and engineer is my man, Breezus, Jim Briggs. Krista Scharfenberg is head of studio. Suzanne Reber is our executive editor, and our executive producer is Kevin Sullivan. Support for Reveal is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Ledson. And remember, there's always more to the story.
No matter what you make, hey, make it great.